Yeah.
It's not as much fun as last time, is it?
No. Well, you guys don't have wine glasses anymore. We've got 2 months of glass.
We didn't have wine last time. We had coffee.
Oh, yeah.
Now we've got a very sensible squash, hot chocolate, and a cup of tea.
Winter's closing in. Well, it's not actually, is it?
What do you mean winter's closing in?
Yeah. It's almost November.
Yeah. Ooh, winter's closing in. I was still walking around today without a coat on.
I've been on a boat today.
You absolute maniac.
What have you been doing today?
I've been taking pictures of a very nice boat. At 8:15 this morning, I was on a squillion quid boat in Canamondrago. There's one other boat and a bunch of swimmers.
No.
It's gorgeous.
Oh, God,
oh, no. It's really lovely,
swimming,
beautiful, clear water.
It's a bit cold for swimming.
Mondrago is a nature reserve beach on the east coast of the island. It's absolutely gorgeous. A little bit busy in the summer, but just me, a millionaire, his boat, and some people swimming.
The water in Mondrago is amazing.
It is, yeah. Especially in the winter. It's even more clear.
Is it really clear and crisp?
Anyway, what have we got going on today?
Well, we better start off with the theme music.
Let's have the theme music. Now?
Yeah, why not?
I'll go and put the tape in.
I say Mallorca, and you say Majorca. I say
Majorca,
and you say
Mallorca.
Mallorca, Majorca, Mallorca, Majorca. Let's call the whole thing off.
So, welcome to the Mallorca Mallorca podcast, episode 12. That was Holly Lowe. We don't give her credit enough, actually, with our theme music. I'm Oliver Nielsen.
I'm Vicky McLeod.
And I'm Gigi Nielsen McLeod.
Hello, darling. Welcome to the kitchen table.
The hybrid's back.
after popular demand, actually.
Really?
Yeah, really. A lot of people commenting.
Actually, someone from the Six Points actually said to me that he admired how I corrected Danny on his preferred packet of crisps, which is obviously supposed to be Monster Munch.
Cutting edge journalism here.
Sure, I'm the authority on this.
I know.
So, what have we got today?
Well,
packed program.
A thrilling chat.
Where
I think we should start with that. The thrilling chat about WTF is happening in Spain at the moment. It's quite a thing. Firstly, we have to say the date is Tuesday,
27th of October, 2020.
The reason why this is important is because we're going to try and tell you the current regulations and state of emergencies and alarms all over Spain, but the chances are they'll be out of date by the time we finish. And we'll have to also say it's a bit of a best guess, really, because there's lots of news coming out, and some of it conflicts and then some of it cancels. As of about 3 days ago, the Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez announced a nationwide lockdown. Forget this, not lockdown, got that wrong already. A nationwide curfew starting at 11 o'clock and finishing at 6 a.m. So you're not allowed to be in a restaurant or a bar.
To clarify, 11 o'clock at night.
11 o'clock at night, 6 a.m. in the morning. You're not allowed in a bar or a restaurant, and you're supposed to be at home in order to try and curb the rapid rise in cases. However, also contained within that are the powers that the regional authorities can move it an hour or so outside. So the Balearics initially went with the 11 till 6 and then moved it yesterday?
Mm-hmm. Your guess is as good as ours.
Well, yeah. So it's now 12 until 6 a.m. 7 a.m.
7 a.m., I think.
12 till 7 a.m. in the Balearics.
Yeah.
And other places do vary. But that's the government has powers to impose this for 2 weeks. That's the maximum they can impose it for. And then it's another 2 weeks and another 2 weeks. They intend to do it for about 6 months, but they can only do it in 2 week blocks and get it voted on.
I have a question.
Parliament.
How will curfew affect the number of COVID cases? As in, how will it change? As in, it's not like coronavirus is like, okay, I'm going to be more active between 12 and 7 o'clock.
It's a good question. I don't completely understand all the logic behind it myself, but the stated logic is that it's being spread actually by a lot of young people who are mixing and having parties and stuff after hours. It doesn't mean the virus suddenly goes away it isn't there before 11, but that's the plan anyway. They also allowed within the emergency powers Spanish regions like the Baleares or Andalusia or the rest of it, to impose travel bans between each other if they want to, if they choose to. So as in today, where are we?
27th of October.
Aragon announced that they were going to be restricting movement for 15 days. So unless you've got a very good reason, you're not allowed in or out of Aragon. and closer to home, Manacor, which is Mallorca's second city, is it? Second biggest town in Mallorca, I think. Over in the east, that's had a bit of a rapid rise in cases, up to about 460 per 100,000.
It doubled. Ooh, in a day.
So they are expected tomorrow, Wednesday, to also announce a 15-day...
They've already announced
Well, they announced it, but they're going to bring it in tomorrow. Non-curfew, a travel ban. So you won't be able to leave or go to Manacor unless you've got a reason. There are a number of reasons. I don't know. I'm not going to go into them now, but look them up. The N332 Facebook site is a really good place to do that. It's run by Guardia Civil officers based in Andalusia, and they make it their job in their spare time, I think, to translate lots of laws into English onto the Facebook page. So it is quite complicated to find accurate information, particularly if you're trying to find it in English, but that's a really good place to go to. So that's all the manky news out of the way, isn't it? What else have you got?
Well, even more manky news.
So let's ask Gigi about what it's like at school at the moment, because you mentioned that the general atmosphere is a little bit...
It's
difficult.
It's gone from cheery school day to I have to be here against my will kind of thing. And it's it kind of feels like you don't really have much freedom within the school. You are escorted from the playground into classroom every time. Every time you have to move around the school by a teacher to make sure you don't mix with other classes.
Right.
We are separated out into years, not groups. However, we are in different groups. So, for example, I'm in fourth of ESO, I'm in fourth of ESO B, and that will carry on until E. And each class has a maximum capacity of 20 students. Some are online, semi in person. Those are from C, well, I don't know about other years, but in my years, C, D and E are half online, half in school. So it's 3 weeks on, 1 week online. And A and B are completely in person, which is slightly annoying.
Are you allowed to, for A and for B, allowed to mix with each other?
Yes, we are allowed to mix with each other within the groups, but we are not allowed to mix with other years.
Right.
And what about lunch and that stuff? You were telling me about Commodore.
Yes. For obvious reasons, I don't really want to go in there anymore, so we don't. But
it's the old school dinners problem.
Yeah. But it's... well, of course, you have to wear your mask up until the moment you eat. The moment you finish eating, you have to put it back on. And every year has a designated time... in which you eat. So fourth of ESO, if you stay in for lunch, in my school is 2:30, which is quite of a stretch when it comes to you have half an hour to eat and get back to class. Then in the actual dining room, you go in, you have two different lanes, and whichever's least busy, you go on that one. The trays are all disinfected. You don't even get to pick out your own cutlery. They pick it out for you. If you want a piece of bread, they have to give it to you. Everything is handed to you with
tongs or something.
Tongs or someone wearing gloves. You are not allowed to pick it up yourself. If you pick it up yourself,
you're in trouble.
You're in big trouble.
Oh, wow.
And the tables, you sit at either end of the table, and there's a giant screen between you. It's not very sociable.
So you're kind of on your own.
You're practically on your own, and you get told where you sit. You can't say, oh, well, that's my friend. They go, yeah, I don't really care. You're here for 5 minutes. Suck it up. And teachers are very strict with space between the students as well, which I can understand because some people are really, really close. But the other day I was about half a metre away from my friend, and my biology teacher came up to me and stood between us to make sure that we were far away from each other.
But much closer to the biology teacher.
Exactly.
Right. Have there been any cases of coronavirus in school?
Apparently, because a student in my class has actually asked this, they are not allowed to say that because of personal details and stuff.
But they can't tell you if there has been someone, but without any.
No.
Really?
That's a disappointment. Because, I mean, like, the lengths they're going to, I'd hope that they had none.
I mean, if they... It is quite difficult. It also depends on the teacher, how strict they are with it. Some teachers... Like, it doesn't matter what weather it is, how cold it is, they want the windows open and the door open. Some of them say, okay, we can leave one or two windows open if you guys are really cold. And there are some teachers that fiddle around with their masks in the middle of class and go, oh, guys, I've really got to breathe and let me take this off 5 minutes. And
it's really? Like, oh, hang on a minute.
It also depends on the teacher.
I mean, look, these are, I hate to keep using the phrase unprecedented times, but they are unprecedented times. You know, everybody...
Yeah.
No one enjoys any of this, but I guess they're doing the right thing, aren't they?
I wonder how it's going to be when winter hits, because you need to have heating on in that building when it gets cold, don't you?
The heating, well, as it was either if you sit next to it, you have to, you know, you're wearing like a Hawaiian shirt and sipping pina coladas. And then if you're standing on the other side of the room where there isn't a heating, you've literally, like, you can build yourself an igloo.
Okay. Typical school heating system then.
So I don't think the heat is going to make much of a difference in the winter. So they said that we can bring in blankets.
Oh my God, really?
We can bring in blankets, we can bring hats, we can bring scarves, we can bring mittens. Yeah, we can bring our jackets to put over our legs.
Those windows are staying open.
They really are.
Okay, fair enough.
Unless it's raining, which
I feel like it's almost like the prime of Miss Jean Brodie. You know, it was like very strict. Come on, girls. And thank you, Gigi. That's interesting. And I'm sorry that you're having to go to school under those conditions. But I am glad that you're. I am sorry.
Why do you make me go?
Because you have to. You have to go.
Something called online school.
Well, we might get back to online school. So, Ollie, who have you been to speak to this week?
I caught up with Nick Entwistle, who you'll hear all about in a minute, in a very lengthy interview, actually. So a bit longer than the podcast today, but he's got too many interesting things to say, and he says them so well. He runs a charity helping homeless people on behalf of the yachting industry, really, and there's never been a greater need than there is right now, particularly in Palma. Lots of people short of food and short of places to stay. So should we hear from him without further ado?
Let's do that.
Here's Nick. All right, so I'm with Nick Entwistle, who I'll let him introduce himself, because he is no shortage of talent in filling some space, actually, when we're talking for an interview, which you'll find out in a second. But Nick, I bumped into a good few years ago when he worked for Pinmar. Things have moved on a little now, and he's running Yachting Gives Back, which is a charity doing some really important work at a really important time. I'm not going to talk any more about Nick or Yachting Gives Back because he's sitting in front of me, so we'll let him do that. So, Nick, why don't you tell me a quick bit about who you are, how you got to, and how Yachting Gives Back started.
Yes. Thank you, Oliver. Yes, I've been here 31 years. When I first came here working on boats, I previously worked in the city for many years. Most recently, the last 10 years in the city was with one of the Spanish banks, mm-hmm. who'd very kindly sent me to Madrid for a few months and taught me Spanish. So when I decided to come sailing, then I was always going to end up here rather than south of France. From when I first came here, Mallorca just always felt comfortable, always felt at home here. And wherever I go since, I'm always happy to get on back on the plane that says Palma. So thoroughly settled down here, messing around on boats for a while for the first 7 or 8 years. And then during that time, I got involved with Pinmar as a volunteer helping to organise the golf tournament.
Right, so you weren't working for them as such?
No, not at all. In fact, it was the other way around. It was quite funny. It goes back to a joke-telling session which Donal Hughes, who ran restaurants and organised big functions, was involved in. He heard me standing in front of a microphone once and recommended me to Peter Allen. Peter Allen, who founded founder of Pinmar, but who had recently set up the Pinmar Golf, and Peter needed somebody to be the master of ceremonies just to keep the thing moving. And so Don said, "Oh, well, Nick's not afraid of a microphone. He you know, give him a go. So I did 5 years as a volunteer.
This is the big Pinmar end of season golf tournament,
An absolute sort of institution in the yachting world. It came to an end last year, but after 31 years, and having raised over that time over €1 million, which we'll come back to. So I'd having done five. Which with hindsight, it was effectively five auditions. Yeah. But at the end of the 5 years, they gave me a job saying, well, you know, he's loyal and he turns up every year and we kind of like him and he seems to be half organized. Let's give him a desk and a computer and a telephone and see what else he can do. Perfect. So I found my little niche, which was wonderful.
So you work for Pinmar, and since then, I was going to say retired, but you haven't at all.
I've retired from Pinmar.
Just stopped earning money.
Yeah, after 22 years with Pinmar. I started off just as a sort of jack of all trades, doing a bit of everything around, running around wherever needed. And then when we bought out, we did a management buyout led by Remy Millot, who is still the CEO of Pinmar. We did an MBO in 2003, allowing Peter then to retire. So I then became company secretary and later director. And then last year, well, in 2016, I sort of semi-retired and went down to sort of part-time, which was very nice because it just gave me the chance to taper it off. Rather, I think the thought of, you know, if you've been working for 45 years or a typical sort of career, then suddenly just to say stop.
Yeah.
And since, ironically, in all those years of the golf tournament, I'd never actually learned to play golf. Right. So that wasn't an option. So I had a nice sort of gentle slope into retirement, so fully retired last year, but then needed, obviously, something else to keep me amused. And if you've seen daytime television, that really is not, definitely need to get out of the house.
Stagnate your brain in a week.
So, and then because Pinmar had, because we'd done so much, as I say, fundraising at Pinmar, and I'd got to know quite a few of the local charities, and I'd always had an idea of getting involved in some way or another. And I don't know if you were there, do you remember at one of the Pinmar golfs, whether it was within your time, when Susie Black, the founder of Shambhala, when we were at Pueblo Español, in that beautiful amphitheatre.
No, I missed that one.
It was just before your time. I invited Susie to come and speak on behalf of the charities, and she was very nervous and so on, but I twisted her arm because I knew she'd be good at it, and she was. She absolutely brought the house down, got a standing ovation, and it was wonderful. So when I had this, you know, the beginnings of an idea of what I ought to do in retirement, so I then got in touch with Susie and had a meeting with her and her wonderful manager of Shambhala Foundation, Victor Mora, and talked to them about where I could possibly fit in. The idea of collecting something from the boats, doing something with the yachts, because we're all aware that yachting is it's a wonderful industry, but it's because the standards are so high, they tend to discard things but still have a lot of life in them.
I think that's the basis, isn't it? A lot of good stuff ends up in the bin if you're not careful.
Totally. And also, the other thing that I sort of had in mind was something we've now ended up doing ourselves, getting very heavily involved in, is these supermarket campaigns. Because, and it's such a simple idea, but I've never seen it anywhere else. I've never seen it in the UK.
No, tell me about those. Go on.
It's where you simply have a couple of trolleys by the entrance to the supermarket, and you say hello to people as they come in, and if they're happy to talk about it, explain what you're doing. We have some little posters on the trolleys, and basically invite people to buy a couple of things on their way around the supermarket, pay for them at the till, obviously, and drop them in our trolleys on the way out. And I was used to seeing that, funnily enough, here at the Bendin Atiroski years ago. And so as I came towards retirement, so not last Christmas, but the Christmas before, when I had sort of 5 months ago, I retired in May, I was sitting in the shipyard, and that was the first full year of the new 1,000-ton travel lift. And so STP was absolutely full.
Sorry, could you just explain?
Yes.
So the non-nautical people, the travel lift.
Right, the travel lift is this mobile cradle which can literally pick boats up out of the water, wheel them around the shipyard and then deposit them in a place on the Harre Stenninger, on the land, where they can then be put on jocks and blocked off, and then they can stay out of the water for however long is required. If necessary, to build it, then build a tent around them. Yeah. All those big white sort of chrysalis-like things that you see opposite the cathedral, those are the tents under.
I've seen them up close. They're kind of like the size of a cathedral, and they lift...
Absolutely,
you know, yeah. Boats the size of office blocks out of the water.
Absolutely.
And this is in STP, the biggest...
So STP has... I mean, that 1,000-ton superlift, I think, is the biggest in Europe now.
And STP is the area in front of the cathedral where they refit super yachts and where all the maintenance happens. It's a very busy part of town, actually.
So. Very much so. So Christmas 2018, sitting in the yard, looking ahead at retirement, and just the yard was absolutely packed. I mean, there were a billion... euros, dollars, whatever worth of super yacht in there. It was absolutely packed and some serious big stuff. And I just thought, you know, if I asked these guys nicely, they'd probably rustle up a couple of bags of rice or pasta and you know, see what we can do. And so it was literally the initial idea was just going to be a food raising campaign.
Yeah.
Sort of a little, you know, but just something nice and simple, along the lines of this supermarket thing. But where we would, and so I got it. Great help from Pinmar Supply, including their, because my original plan was to use their, you know, see if we could use their carrier bags and get some sort of special carrier bags made so that people could take away something. Right. We could print a list of what we wanted on them. But then speaking to Pinmar Supply, they said, oh no, we've already got boxes. They had flat pack boxes that they used for delivering. So I made some stickers to put on the boxes just with lists of, you know, pasta, rice, olive oil, tuna, all the kind of stuff, you know, and plus personal hygiene stuff and so on. So we handed that. So Pinmar Supply very kindly agreed to hand those out in the shops, and from their vans and so on.
So the crew would take these back and say, so, oh, we so can fill crew, that up with whatever's written
exactly.
on the
side. So they would see what was required, and then our details were on them. They could just phone up and we would go and collect them and so on. And then Pinmar Supply also very kindly gave us some space in one of the warehouses in Saint-Oms where we could just have some shelving in a corner where we could take the stuff, sort it all out and decide what went where and so on. And going back to having spoken to Susie from Shambhala, the other thing she advised me was gave me a list of other charities that we could work with. And the two we chose, and specifically, I'm so glad she did, she was spot on with her recommendations, were Association Tardor, which I always felt bad about calling it a soup kitchen because it was, that's the typical English phrase, but it was so much more than that. It was a comedor social, a social dining room where people could come in and sit down and eat. And Mallorca Sense of Fam, which is a food bank. And so we originally were just delivering stuff to them.
And it's sort of principally supporting homeless people or people at sort of the wrong end of the socioeconomic spectrum?
Absolutely. Either homeless in the case of Tardor, because there, I mean, it was, you know, there's room for, I don't know, sort of 60 odd people to sit down or something, to sit down, come and have lunch. And then, so people could come there for lunch. And then there was also, you know, it was warm and a safe space. There was a telly on and so on. And there were people there giving a bit of advice on helping people with problems. Mm-hmm. Sometimes there'd be volunteer barbers in there cutting hair.
And that's it's in Parma.
It's in Parma, just off the Avenidas in Reina Costanza. If you're going from the sea towards Corte Inglés, it's just off to the right before the Manacor Road. And so, as I said, there'd be barbers there. I'm always in these places, more men than women, but sometimes there'd be somebody there doing the ladies' nails or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it was just a nice place, and we could take things. So then people started to say, well, we were collecting food for these places, for both places. And then the crews got a bit more used to it and said, well, oh, we've got some old uniforms to get rid of. Do you want clothes and so on? So then, yes, it branched out to where we were getting clothing for people and so on. And it grew from there. So to the extent that where we learned to sort of say yes to everything and then we'd find a use for it later. So during that, so we started in Easter 2019. I signed up two fellow
pensioners. Really? Is that recently?
Yes. Hmm. So I signed up two fellow pensioners, Paddy Pigden, who was, lots of people knew, ex-yachty, and then also came ashore and was working with safety equipment. So loads of people knew Paddy. Paddy was always out and about, knew everybody, picking up their life, you know, servicing their life rafts and that sort of thing. And Dennis Mashovsky, who was international paint and then all grip technical paint expert. So I was used to
we all knew Dennis in Pinmar because he would help us with technical paint questions.
So you dragged them away from the daytime telly and
so on. Quite. So both of them immediately said, so I got hold of them and said, look, I've got this little idea. Do you fancy it? And they both immediately said, yes, bless them. And so we started off, there's like three old pensioners handing out flyers on the dock. So as well as the Pinmar shops handing out the boxes, we were handing out these flyers, as one did in the last century. Mm. And then a wonderful thing happened. Louise Balfour, who's another ex-yachty who had then by then become shore-based, got in touch. She was very good friends with Ava, who I used to run the golf tournament yes. with, whom you will know well, who was and still is Remy's Remy Millot's PA. And she got in touch with Ava, and I think she actually heard, if I remember it rightly, I think she heard an interview I did with Richie on Radio 1
okay.
and right. heard that and liked the sound of what we were doing and got in touch to see if she could help. And boy, could she help, because she understands Facebook. Which, and so,
which three retired yachties.
Three old pensioners.
You do now.
To put it politely. Well, I'm now a converted dinosaur. Mm. But yeah, the Facebook thing has been just amazing. The reach, so I think our best ever story reached about 28,000 people. Louise posts regularly reach 10 to 15,000 people. And also, again, we've had great support from other people too. And within the Facebook thing, Lars Mollin at Palmer Yacht Crew very kindly lets us post regularly in there. So then we're reaching his 60,000 members or whatever. It's stunning.
It's a Facebook group. Obviously, it's called Palmer Yacht Crew, but yes. I mean, it's yacht crew now all over the world, isn't it?
Yes, because obviously they join. I mean, there aren't obviously 60,000 yachties here, but 60,000 who've passed through or whatever. So yes, so
or
they're now
keeping an eye just in case there's a job going on.
Exactly. So there's loads of good stuff on and jobs. And
it's about getting it. Getting your cause with Yachting Gives Back into the brains of people who are likely to, instead of throwing something in a skip go, I bet Nick could use this.
Absolutely. And so, as I say, people started to give us uniforms so that, because again, it's all good quality stuff, you know, it's all Slam and Henry Lloyd or whatever. Mm.
And if they change the colour of the boat, you need to change the colour of the uniform.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, yes, again, they're discarding stuff that might be a little bit worn. They always need brand new stuff for when the guests and the owners are coming. So they tend to discard stuff before it's, while it still has plenty of life in it. And then we started to get clothes during last summer to go with the food. And then in the autumn, Tardor found premises on General Riera for a new homeless, a shelter for people who are homeless to move into, to take some people off the streets. So that then meant we were looking for bedding.
Yeah, okay.
They got the actual beds themselves, they got from one of the hotels, which was great, and with matching bed threads. So we had nice matching beds, but then you need an awful lot of sheets and mattresses and duvets and so on. So we started collecting that from the boats, which again perfectly coincided with the autumn refit season.
Okay.
So, of course, loads of the boats are getting rid of stuff.
Not a perfectly good linen.
Exactly.
Looking for somewhere to go.
You know, I mean, typically, you get some beautiful top quality towels. Mm. They do a year in the guest cabins, a year in the crew cabins, and then what? And other years of life left in these things. And the same with the sheets and the pillowcases and so on. And as I always say, you know, why shouldn't a homeless person have some Egyptian cotton sheets to sleep on? You know, and a billionaire's pillow.
Yes. So
we brought, and the other nice thing that happened was, of course, also the charities themselves, when we first started, it was they didn't know much about the yachting industry and so on. And so we were sort of getting used to each other. And a lot of the stuff we would take would be pretty random.
Yeah.
And the food we would collect, we'd be given this food. So the first thing you got to do is work out what language, you know, where did the yacht buy it? What language is it? You know, is that a fruit? Is that a vegetable?
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
And then check that things are in date and so on. Hmm. But then they began to get sort of a bit more used to us and realized, actually, you know what? They might bring us some odd stuff, but it's all pretty good kit.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was really nice. So they began to, we sort of got to know a bit better everybody, and they understood what we could do.
And take it forward, if you don't mind, to, because really things began to change a lot in terms of demand during the lockdown, wasn't it? And you really
Yes, in the lockdown itself, I mean, that 2 week...
Initial 2 weeks.
The initial two weeks. Then we... I mean, prior to that, I'd still been able to move around on the basis. The initial set of rules, it was number 5 said if you were helping vulnerable people, because it was before we were registered. So, but with a piece of paper from Tardor and from Mallorca Sense of Fam, I could move about, collecting and dropping stuff off and so on, which was fine. I got stopped lots of times by the police, and I showed them my piece of paper, and I got very polite, encouraging responses from them always, and liked what we were doing and sent me on my way, which was nice. And then we were able, for example, when people were taken off the streets and put into the sports halls.
These were homeless people.
And so on. So homeless people, when they had to be taken in and sort of sheltered and... protected, then they were taken to several sports facilities. We were going to, particularly because Tardor were associated with the one, and I've forgotten the name of it now, but on the road just behind the big cemetery, there's a basketball court there.
Right.
And so there were 40 or 50 people there. And I got a message from them saying, help, you know, because all these people had come on the street. It was still, you know, March and pretty cold and so on. And this big, drafty place, and saying, you know, can we get together some warm weather clothing for them? Mm-hmm. So we emptied the container. But of course, by this stage, we had been very kindly given a shipping container inside the yard by STP, so we'd moved out of the Penmar warehouse into the yard. But so we took everything we could get our hands on from there. Also, my neighbours here at home downstairs, the cancer care charity, Angela McGrath, was very helpful, gave us a load of her winter stuff and so on. So I was taking masses of carloads of stuff up there. And then, of course, a few weeks later, it was help. We need T-shirts and flip flops.
Didn't you get quite a lot of help from chefs?
And then the chefs, the chefs thing. So yes, once the restaurants had all had to close, one or two chefs after the 2 weeks when nobody could do anything much.
Yeah.
I must come back to that with the GoFundMe thing as well. But then yes, the cooking thing came back. Some of the chefs opened up their kitchens to cook for Tardor.
These were restaurant chefs.
Restaurants
were closed.
Exactly. The restaurants were closed, but they had these lovely facilities. And the one I got to know particularly was Johnny Maloney at Can Eduardo, the lovely fish restaurant above the fish market. Johnny was doing this. I was very happy to help with because by this stage I was sourcing the plastic takeaway boxes. I mean, it's a real shame it's single-use plastic, but there wasn't a feasible alternative. So I was supplying those for Tardor. So I was very happy then to supply those to Johnny. But then he would cook. He's got a nice big kitchen there, and he had friends or chefs from other kitchens. He had a nice team there cooking stuff and sending loads of meals to Tardor, and then sending those to Tardor to give to people, because, of course, by that stage, nobody could come in and eat. They could only
take away,
act as a takeaway. And also sending the food, you know, and then they needed food to send up to the shelter and so on. And so quite a few restaurants did that. And then the yachts first got involved with a wonderful Welsh chef called Jan Richards. She's the chef on a big sail and on a big Perini called Pantalassa. And Jan started doing it for the yachts and posted on Facebook. And the boat was in the yard very close to us. So I got in touch and we talked about what we could do together. You know, so I was very happy to provide her with some of the takeaway boxes. And it was funny because she said, oh, I wish I was congratulating her on the idea. And she was saying, oh, I wish I'd thought of it sooner. And I was saying, I wish I'd thought of it at all. I think it's a brilliant idea. And so I said, look, if you don't mind, I wouldn't dream of trying to take the credit for it, but I'd love to exploit it now that we have this nice big Facebook audience and through Palmer Yacht Crew. And she said, oh, no, of course, please do.
So we're the biggest restaurateur in Palmer, suddenly.
So, well, then, I mean, there was a time when we had, there was a separate WhatsApp group just for the boats in Port de Mallorca who were cooking. Right. You know, they had a nice little group. So boats in the Club de Mar, I then had, Karine on Explorer, Kenora, who's just come back, they've started cooking again, Tilakana. So I had three boats in Port de Mallorca, Tilak in the Club de Mar, Pacific, which was the biggest boat in the harbour. The right. skipper's an old friend of mine from sailing school days years ago. And they've just left. They've just arrived in right. Germany for their winter refit. But while they were here, their wonderful chef Luca was cooking 200 meals a week in his enormous kitchen.
I mean, with all of that collectively together, how many a week was he producing?
We were producing probably at its height, perhaps 300 or 400 meals a week. But of course, they're handing out. You know, even now, I mean, they're handing out. You know, they were doing sort of 600 a day, and it's still that or even more. At the moment, I'm doing 600 boxes, 600 of the plastic boxes a day. I give them one
a day.
Yes, and I'm not sure that, and I don't know enough if that's enough for everybody. So no, I mean the numbers are scary.
This brings us on to the next bit, really, which is, I mean that was summer, that was the lockdown, that was the start of Yachting Gives Back, but we're heading into a winter and a pretty evil recession, and lots of people in real need on the island. So, I mean, how do you view the coming winter, and what can people do to help?
It's going to be mighty tough. The good news is that there is a lot, although demand is continually increasing as the damage caused by this wretched virus. So that is only going to get worse as there are going to be problems with people the people in the tourist industry not getting the paro that they would have otherwise had in the winter and so on. So I'm not quite sure how that's all going to work.
Yeah, just to give a bit of background
because
on that. The Spanish welfare system, in the way that it normally works, you have a limited access to unemployment benefit. But this isn't a normal year. So unless there's some pretty big shake-ups, there's going to be people left behind by the benefit system and some pretty big numbers. Now, there probably are going to be some changes, but there's still going to be some need, for sure.
Very much so. Very much so. So, a couple of things have happened recently. As far as Tardor is concerned, well, two things. One is, they've now found premises for another shelter, so that's currently underway. So we're hoping to have that open within a few weeks. So people can help, but we're still collecting bedding there. My back bedroom is currently halfway up to the ceiling with bedding, so we're collecting bedding for there. But as far as the food is concerned, Tardor, obviously they're cooking for many hundred people every day, but they're also acting as a food bank themselves in the same way that Mallorca Sense Fam does, that we also support. Mallorca Sense Fam gets a certain amount of staples from central government.
We're talking about bags of rice and pasta.
Bags of rice and pasta and oil and all the sort of standard things. So what Tardor has been doing is also doing these food-raising campaigns at supermarkets, and this is where Eroski have been brilliant. They started off... I think they had a list of 8 Eroskis that we were doing in Parma, and Jules, one of my volunteers, Jules and I used to go just around the different ones wherever we were sent, doing these over the weekends. But they were only the ones in town, and I said to Tardor, can you please get me Bendinat? It's my sort of home patch. We've got loads of volunteers living this side of town. Loads of people. I'm sure if we ask our friends to come and help, they will. But also, it's a relatively prosperous area, but also lots of foreigners who would be very happy to help and so on. So what I didn't realize at first was it took a little while to organize, only because the original batch of Eroskis, it hadn't occurred to me that they're a franchise. So it was one franchise company who was doing it. So we had to, but Eroski, obviously the sort of the parent Eroski group have been extremely helpful. So now we're doing these all over the place. And sure enough, so I was able to get hold of the Bendinat one. So we now do Bendinat. It's now one weekend a month, but they're also doing it in San Agustin, in Palma Nova, and Santa Ponsa. But the Bendinat one, so I have a lovely group of 20-odd volunteers, so I've enough now to be able to sort of cover, as people are beginning to move around a bit and rotate, I can rotate them, but I have a wonderful core of volunteers there. And we never get less than... three trolleys a day, and on a really good day, it's more like 4.5. So we're doing so over the 3-day weekend, it's sort of 10 or a dozen trolleys, which I then take back to Tardor, and so some of that food is going in the pot to cook the meals to be handed out individually, but some of it is going to the food bank part for people who have accommodation. There are plenty of people, a lot of people, you know, tourism workers typically, but who are hanging onto their accommodation by their fingernails because the support they're getting is enough to pay the rent, but not necessarily leaving enough left over to buy food, and not just food, but, you know, nappies and cleaning products and personal hygiene stuff and so on. So those are all the things we collect at the Eroski. And then what has happened recently, because Tardor was struggling then, trying to cook all this food, but also act as a food bank as well in the one location.
So there are queues around the block.
Really. Well, it's not so. There are queues. It's not. Okay. It's not so bad. Only because in the obviously in the height of summer you couldn't have people queuing that long. So they have slots.
Okay. Right.
So, because otherwise, yeah, you can't have people standing for hours in August in the heat. So, but yes, there are queues, but not. But they're sort of staggered a bit. And so what they've done now, they very recently got. So Tardor is on a street corner. Reina Costanza, and I forget the name of the other street, and they've just recently acquired another unit on the next corner of the same block, just going back towards the Avenidas, which is really handy, because what it means is all the food gets delivered to Tardor 1, we can call it that, but then so whatever needs to go in the pot stays there, but the rest and then just goes around the corner to the new one. And they've also got a load of big chest freezers in there, which is great, and proper shelving and so on. Every time I go, it's all relatively new, but every time I go, it's better organized and more like that. So that's working really well. And the freezers are a great thing because, again, this time of year, the yachts, they're coming out of the water, they're shutting down the galley, things need winter maintenance and so on. So what are they doing? Shutting down the freezers, and they need to empty them all. So that's great, because before it was a struggle for us to take frozen food. One of our greatest supporters is a motor yacht, Tata Sue. They got in touch a while ago to say they wanted to give us a load of meat because I knew exactly what it was, and I could say and said to Tardor, "Can you find room for it?" And they said, "No, please ask the boat to defrost it one day, pick it up the next morning, and it'll go in the and they cook it that day." So that worked perfectly. But now, more recently, I mentioned Pacific, this 80-odd meter boat just before they left. Luca, who'd been cooking all these meals for us, also then said, "Oh, and by the way, before we head off for the winter, I'm going to empty the freezer."
So you can take it straight there, frozen.
Walk-in freezer.
Right.
I mean, about half the size of my container. Wow. Never seen anything like it. Absolutely amazing. Walked in there. So it needed, and because Luca has been doing so much, he was, even when he was cooking so many meals, it was too much for my car and my cold bags and so on. So Evolution Agents, one of the logistics companies, very kindly, Beatriz Alonso and her team very kindly used to send a refrigerated van.
Right.
In the mornings to go and do the pickup from there. So we filled, and I don't mean a little bit, I mean a sort of transit-sized van, refrigerated van, and literally filled it to the ceiling.
From one boat?
Just the frozen stuff.
Wow.
When they entered the freezers. But thankfully, they had enough capacity now in the new unit to take that. So, and in fact, Jan Richards, who I mentioned, who got the whole thing started off, I just was reading a post. She's now back, the boat's back, and she just has emptied her freezers, and she's put about, she just posted the story to all her chef friends to say, do the same thing, get in touch with her or get in touch with us.
And this is now the time of the year when that's happening.
Because a lot of it's that time of year when winter maintenance or whatever, or just end of season clear out. And even, because even if the boats are going across, and some boats are still going to try and, you know, going across to the Caribbean. And so hopefully there'll be some sort of a season there because the islands could, as we know, they're also equally tourist-based as we are, so they could use the business. But the chefs will be looking at their stores and seeing what's going to go out of date, what won't last the winter, and so on. They'll be hopefully parking some of that in our direction and restocking before they go across. Or they're having a proper shutdown and we can have all of it while the freezers are shut down for maintenance and so on. So
I need to move you on to what people can do to help. I mean, you've heard the story. You've heard what a success. I was going to say, let's try and get this right. Sadly, what a success. It's terrible. There's a need for it, but the fact that there is a need and you're increasing in size so quickly. But if people want to get involved, what can they do?
So several different things. Firstly is go to your, you know, keep an eye open at your local Eroski for the trolleys, and please buy some extra things and pop them in the trolley on your way out. Or what quite a few of the yachts have been doing for us is, you know, because they've got budgets where they can do it, or, and in many cases it's the crew themselves putting their hands in their pockets and just spending the money, or, you know,
go to your local supermarket and buy a couple of bags of stuff and deliver them to us in STP or direct to Tardor or to Mallorca Sensa Fam. So yeah, and again, not just food, but you know, baby food, nappies, toiletries, cleaning products, and so on. So
do you need take cash donations?
I take cash donations, right. Yeah, absolutely. We are now a properly registered foundation. That was almost complete, that process, before the lockdown came, so it got delayed. But I now have that. But but before I did that, I couldn't have a bank account, but yeah. I now have a bank account. And in fact, I haven't even been to collect it yet, but I now have a macro card.
Right,
So when we get cash donations, I can go and spend that. And we can take cash. I mean, normally, just at the Eroski over a typical weekend, right. I always end up with about 100 euros, just because people see the trolley on the way and say, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't see you there. Can, you know,
Here's a fiver,
whatever it is. So helping with the food like that. The other thing is, I mean, I'd say the chefs, for the yacht chefs, to start cooking again. I say Kenora, one of the sailboats in Port Mallorca, they've started cooking again, as has Kealoha. Shauna, the chef on Kealoha in Port Vale. So if anybody wants to do some cooking on their yachts, I'll happily provide the takeaway boxes and we'll pick it up and deliver it.
We'll put some links to Yachting Gives Back social media and your webpage on the notes, so a podcast note. So wherever you've found the podcast, have a look.
Wonderful.
And there'll be a link below or above, depending on where you're
seeing. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, all the latest stuff is always on our Facebook page.
It's a terrible shame that people need you so much, but as long as they do need you, I can't think of a better man to be doing it. So
well,
thanks for what you're doing, Nick, and thanks for spending some time with us today. So you know what to do, everybody.
Yep.
Yachting Gives Back. Thanks very much, Nick.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, Oliver.
That guy is a bit of a legend.
He is a bit, isn't he? To say the least.
I've always liked him. He's such a nice person to be around, but he's really dynamic. I think he's amazing.
He's the perfect person to do that as well, actually. Boundlessly enthusiastic. And seems to be full of energy.
Not just Nick, to be honest. It's also like the team that he's pulled together and the general ambience and the energy in the yachting community to pull and to try to help other people. I really admire that.
I think so. And the reason it's expanded so quickly is partly because there's a need to do it, partly because people really want to help, and more than partly because Nick is such a great guy, and everyone, if Nick asks you a favour, you just say, of course.
Yes.
So he's got a lot of people offering him lots of favours at the moment. So good luck to him, and thanks to him and all the work he does.
But I've got to say that even though there was a lot of depressing news and sad news and stressed out news about and things that are making us feel quite concerned about the future, economic future of Mallorca, that even amongst all of that, when businesses are closing and saying that they're not going to be opening again, there are still other businesses that are finding a way to change what they're doing or reinventing themselves. And I find that really exciting, and that amongst all this really difficult days, difficult weeks, difficult months, possibly a difficult whole year or longer, I guess, there are still people trying really hard. I interviewed a business in Santa Catalina this week, and I'm actually going to do another interview next week with another business just to illustrate the entrepreneurial vibe that we've got here in Mallorca.
Yeah.
So even amongst all of this really awful situation that we're all living through, there's some glimmers of hope.
There are. I mean, it is times like, you know, we run a little business, I have done for a few years, and you're usually too busy running it to think about changing it or think about doing things a bit differently. But suddenly when you're faced with no option, that's the point where you really, you know, your fight to survive makes you think of all kinds of clever things to do, and there's plenty of people doing just that, so I can't wait to hear about
that. Well, that's kind of like you feel no need to change when you're comfortable.
Absolutely, yeah.
So,
if you're suddenly,
and quarantine
very wise.
Is...
if the money's not coming in anymore, you suddenly have to, you're forced to try and find something else to do.
Quarantine has left a lot of people thinking, I guess.
Certainly has. So, there we are. That's a positive, isn't it?
So coming up in the next episode, going to be focusing back on business.
Right.
There you go.
Okay. So in the meantime, thank you very much for listening.
Oh.
What?
Instagram. www.instagram. What is the Instagram name? Mallorca Podcast. And if you want to follow us on Facebook, you can find us at Majorca Mallorca. And then if you want to send us an email, you can do that at MajorcaMallorcaPodcast@gmail.com.
Exactly. Please do. If there's anything you want us to talk about or any observations you have about what we've said,
and also,
please get in touch.
It would be great if you could review us, if your podcast provider has that option, and leave us a nice 5-star review. That really helps us.
Yes, anything below 3, please don't bother.
Yeah, no, just 5 stars would be nice. Mm-hmm. Thanks. And please,
constructive criticism, please.
No, none of that. And 5-star reviews, and click subscribe and share us with your friends, please.
Perfect.
We're trying to spread the word about Mallorca and what it's like to live here, and your support means a lot.
Certainly does. That's it for now. We'll see you next time. Links to Yachting Gives Back will be in the show description, so I don't know whether I mentioned that. So if you want to help out, volunteer, give them some money, or just find out what they're doing, click on the link. We'll see you next time.
Ta-ra.
Bye.
Bye. Mallorca, 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 let's go.